Tantrum House Board Gaming Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRD in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, AEG, We Make Fun, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are here to help you sort through the cardboard commotion to help you find the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today you've got Jonah Dew.
Journeyman Dan.
Katie Pills.
Melissa Delp.
And Kevin Delp.
In the house.
In today's episode, we will be talking about games that we've been playing. Our topic for today is escape room type games, and we will have an interview later in the show as well. So, what have we all been playing?
Well, we got to play Micro Macro.
From Pegasus Spiel?
Yes. I knew I was going to mess it up.
So currently that game's nominated for the Spiel des Jahres.
I know.
So I was excited to play it because I was like, I got to make sure I give it a good play, right? So that just in case it wins.
So you stole it and took it home.
I did.
And you played through one scenario?
No, so I've actually played probably eight.
Wow. Because we played one tonight as a group. Mm-hmm. And I think it actually worked well with a lot of people looking, because it's basically this huge map that you're unfolding.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun, too, to be like, look at that little guy. He's doing this. Well, where could he have done that? Oh, well, right.
Because the tagline is Micro Macro Crime City.
Yes.
And there's a lot of like crimes going on in the city.
Yes.
Yeah, the only thing that I'm iffy about for the game is that it does kind of recommend that you hang this huge city map on the wall.
Oh,
but I mean, like taking the game out of the box, I'm going to put it on the table,
right?
Like anyone's going to.
So you
to
want
do.
People standing up on the
wall?
Yeah,
but then I was playing it. So I played it with like three people, no problems. But then I went to four people, got a little tight. And I was like, this makes sense why they said hang it on the wall. Cause now I'm like weaving in and out of people when you're trying to track some things. In
but
the
wall, you all have to look at it this way. Whereas a table, you can be from different. Like I can't go on the ceiling on a wall.
Well,
no,
you
but
don't
it's
really want to be
at
like
upside
behind
down.
It or upside down.
Oh,
you want to be looking at it kind of.
I gotcha.
Front ways.
So for anyone who doesn't know what this game is,
Melissa, tell us about Micro Macro.
Basically, this really large map with black and white illustrations, so kind of like pen illustrations,
just outlines too,
and think. Something sort of like Where's Waldo?
Yeah, Where's Waldo is the first thing.
But there's no color, and you have different scenarios that you're going through that ask you to look for a certain person and find out what they were doing, who were they with, and you're going through this huge map looking to find these scenes to be able to answer questions about a crime or an event that has happened.
Yeah. They recommend in the rules that you play like the first three or four scenarios in order. So you kind of get the hang of it.
So which one
did
we do?
Up the difficulty. Oh, we did like scenario like 12 or
did
something.
Did we really?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Jonah.
I wanted to throw you to the wolves.
I felt like we did pretty good.
No, you guys did fine.
Yeah.
But I did like that because it builds up what I'm doing and what I'm looking for.
So was scenario one like super easy?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that way you start to realize how you're tracking people through the city because every scene is like either a before or after. Of what's happening. Like, it's not a new scene. It's just that person from way over there has now moved here, right?
Yeah.
It was good. I really enjoyed it, actually. I'm understanding why it's been nominated.
Yeah, it's so easy to pick up and play.
Yeah.
And it's so different. So, that's really different than anything I've ever played.
I had no clue about the game. I mean, I've heard so many good things about it. I knew it was like a Where's Waldo sort of thing, but I didn't know, like, how did the scenarios work? But, like, actually playing it tonight, I was like, oh, this is pretty impressive. The only thing I will say is the theme. I'm a little concerned being a family game of the year. The theme is Crime City.
Yeah.
So that's my one, like, I'm like,
played a scene today that had some infidelity in it, too.
Did it?
Yeah.
That's what we were saying. Right. It's true. The
guy was
the wife got knocked him off.
Yeah, I did hear. I didn't notice it on the map because we only did one scenario. But there's, like, a few scenes that have some innuendo that maybe a kid wouldn't understand, but you know that there's something kind of adultish going on.
Mm. I agree.
I'm surprised. Yeah,
I played one of those.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I could see this being a fine family game without, like, they could have other types of things that they're trying to, clues or mysteries. It doesn't have to be crimes.
Yeah, I fully expect different cities in the future.
Oh, okay.
And it's got to be because it's really a solid game. Yeah, they also say that once you play through, they're like 16 or 18 given scenarios. Mm-hmm. They've got a few like, see if you can figure this one out without clues type idea.
Okay.
And then they also say, check our website because we'll actually update and give you more scenarios
They go.
So I'm thinking after I play 20 of these scenarios on this map, that at some point they've just got to give me a new map and let me play those, right?
You know, I'm going to ask them if we can get an exclusive scenario for Tantrum House Kickstarter.
Ooh,
that would be cool. Good. It doesn't have to be a giant city.
No, like an exclusive like scenario. Like they give us a pack of cards.
Oh, okay.
Or
for the current map.
For the current map. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That would be really neat. I know this isn't a part of the game at all, but I feel an itching need to like color it because it looks like a coloring book.
Yeah, it does.
Like, I feel like you'd take you forever to color it, but it'd be fun to do it after you play all the scenarios.
It would take you forever. It would take you forever to color that person the same
way.
Every time you see him.
Well, the characters are pretty simple.
I agree, but we played a scenario where they didn't move a lot. Like, at one point, I was like, you better make sure you didn't get on that subway. Because, like, I played a scenario where it's like, top left corner of the city, bottom right corner of the city, got in a boat, got in a car. And so, like, tracking him and then making sure
he's all over
the
whole city.
But obviously, once you do all 20 scenarios, coloring it would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I like that. So I would still say, based on our one play, and you said 8 mm-hmm. so far, still think it'll win?
I do think it'll win.
Yeah. It'll win. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. That's number 2 down. Because Kinderspiel, we got Dragomino.
Yeah, we predicted Dragomino, and it won.
Oh, okay.
We predicted Micro Macro before we played it, even.
I know.
And now we're playing it, and we're thinking it. We did good.
Okay, good. Whew. Good stuff. Well, we also played Doodle Dungeon tonight from the same company, Pegasus Spiel.
Oh, yeah, we did. I didn't
keeping with the theme.
Didn't even realize that. I didn't think about it being the same company.
So Melissa and I played
this an escape room, Doodle Dungeon.
Does this
count?
This is the draw.
I know, is it? Doodle Dungeon.
Oh, you're trying to escape. Oh,
it's a different type. Well, you're building your dungeon and you don't want the hero to escape.
But it's an escape type game. Melissa,
does it count?
But not escape room game.
Okay.
I wouldn't think so.
Escape is being used in a different way.
Fine. We'll let it pass. So, but Doodle Dungeon, Melissa and I played a few times. Katie and Ryan and Amy and Chantel were able to play this. It is basically goes through different phases in the game. The first phase, you're drafting a hand of 14 cards, which takes a long time with a 4-player game.
Yes.
And as you,
it takes a long time because you're drawing your dungeon based on the cards that you draft.
Yes. Uh-huh. But there are stencils. So unless you go back and put in a bunch of details, it should go fairly quickly.
Right. But adding the details is fun.
Yes, it is. I added details on it.
So the rules actually have a like drawing guide if you want to learn how to draw the different monsters.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That would take too long. Stencils are quick.
Yeah. So I do appreciate that, so that your monsters actually look like what they're supposed to be, goblins and orcs and dragons and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that first phase is the drawing phase, drafting and drawing. And then you move to the second phase after everyone has a hand of 14 cards. And you'll then pass your paper to another player in the game, and they actually will be drawing a path from the entrance to the dungeon to the exit to the dungeon, going through as many monsters for the hero to try to defeat all those monsters in your dungeon. You, of course, as the drawer of the dungeon, want your dungeon to be as most powerful as possible and not to have any of your monsters die. The hero, the person drawing, wants the hero to defeat all the monsters. So that's phase 2, mm-hmm. the drawing of the path. And then phase 3 is the other lengthy part of the game, is where actually you're taking turns. And Melissa's going to explain it. I hear she's like chomping at the bit over there.
So basically you're going to take the hero on the path that has been drawn, and you stop at each encounter, whether it's a monster or a trap, those sort of things. And the cards that you drafted at the beginning of the game also have actions on them. So in phase one, you're just using them to draw the elements. But then in this third phase, you can actually play the cards. Some of them you can play on your own dungeon to make your monsters more powerful. Other cards you can play on other people to weaken their monsters or to make the hero jump over a trap, those sort of things.
That part of the game, right, what Melissa was just talking about, is the most Munchkin feeling type part of the game, because the artwork is the guy that does the Munchkin art. So I would say overall the game does not feel like like you're playing Munchkin, but that part of the game where you're adding to your monster strength or where you're cursing other people, it does have that sort of, oh, that person's doing well, I'm going to go hit them sort of thing.
Definitely.
You felt that too, Katie?
Yes. Yeah. Ryan even commented on that. He's interesting. This is the Munchkin part of this game.
I agree. Yeah, totally. And then if you are able to, if the hero dies in your dungeon, then that's good because you won't have any negative points then. And then all the monsters that didn't die are going to give you positive points. Any hidden treasures in your dungeon are going to give you positive points. What else gives you positive points? There's like one other thing.
It's monsters and treasures.
And then not negative points.
Right. Yeah. Because if the hero does escape, you lose points equal to how much health the hero has left.
Yeah. So.
I think Chantel ended up with 3 points. Aww. Unfortunately,
total?
Yes.
3 points? Perfect. Now I know when I go home. 3 points.
I'm guessing Ryan did really well with the slime monsters.
I think actually Katie won because she also had some slime monsters. We had some cards that are promo pack that I just threw in there. And I think we decided that they were maybe a little too powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you are going to play with, if we played again with the slime monsters, I think we'd lower their power to 10. That
or
way you have a
certain number of times
50-50 shot at not rolling a pass on that.
Like, sure. Or it can only last 3 times or something.
Yeah,
there's a limit.
Some sort of limit.
Yeah.
It needed to be limited a little bit. It felt a little bit OP.
I agree. Yeah.
So, I mean, because Ryan and I were the only two that got slime monsters, mm-hmm. and we both had 2. And we, my slime, the first slime my hero hit killed it. Because the slime monster requires you to kill it to pass, to keep going. So my slime monster just slowly disintegrated the hero, if like the third step into the dungeon.
Very cool.
Yeah. So.
Well, over on the kids' end of the table, we pulled out Hammer Time from Haba. Played that with my kids.
You were at the kids' table, Dan.
Yeah.
Hammer Time?
Hammer Time.
Hammer
Time. Yeah. Your dwarves.
Can't touch this.
That's right. So your dwarves, and you pull out all these gems from the box, and you put them on the top of the box. So you lay the box on the table, and you put them on top. And then there's a wooden hammer, and you have to try.
I saw your kid with the hammer.
Yeah, yeah.
They were enjoying this.
Yes. My youngest is 2, and she kept raising up, "My turn, Daddy?" And then whack, whack, whack.
She did. She was yelling it during a time we were recording some audio.
Now, this was a five-year-old and up. So it was mainly she just enjoyed the hammer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you have a goal. Each turn you have a goal, like you have to knock off even numbered of gems or odds or whatever it might be. And it's a little bit like, you know, that that arcade game where you put in a quarter and depending on where it drops, it might push something off the edge.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a
Psychic
little...
Larry loves that game.
Yeah. I don't know what that game is called, but everyone knows that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you put, you know, the coins drop and then they push stuff off.
Exactly.
That game.
It's classic. Got a little bit of a feel where you're knocking the box, trying to get some of the gems to fall off.
Oh, interesting.
And then collect certain colors. You have cards that want certain colors. When you fill them up, you flip it over and if you're the first to 4, you win the game. So it's very simple, but if you've got kids who maybe like hitting things, it's a good way to go. Again, 5 and up.
How long is that box going to last if you have kids that like hitting things?
That's a good question. I mean, I went and gave it like a solid tap, and I had like 20 gems come flying off that, which is bad. You always want 8 or less.
Okay.
So you do have to have some finesse to it. You're not going to be pounding on it.
That's why it's 5 and up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my 3-year-old could hit the box.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
oh,
then
yeah.
we're going to lose.
He can.
Yeah, then we're going to lose the game for sure.
But that, it was a fun little game, quick game. Played it with a 7 and a 5-year-old and sort of a 2-year-old, and they had a blast with it.
Cool. So,
Hammer Time by Haba.
Nice.
I want to throw out one other game.
Oh, go for it. And then we need to talk about the last Pegasus Spiel game.
Okay.
We do.
So this one, I can't quite tell. It might also be from Pegasus Spiel, but it had like 10 different producers in its credits.
Okay.
But Nidavellir, does that ring a bell with anybody?
I know who you're talking about.
Okay. I've been playing that lately, and it's like it sucked me in. It's super fun. You're bidding using coins for these dwarves that are like 5 or 6 different colors. Each color has a different scoring mechanism to them. And if you bid with your 0 coins, so you're going to lose the bid, you get to exchange your 2 highest coins that you didn't use for like the sum of the value. Mm. So if you have a 5 and a 4 that you didn't use, it turns into a 9. Mm-hmm. So your coins get worth more. And then as you collect these things, like one category, it's basically squaring however many you have. So like if you have 10 of those things, it gets bigger and bigger. First time I played it, I had like 180 points. I was like, wow, that's a lot. That's awesome. But like, then I just played it and I had 380 points.
Sure. So oh, wow.
The point spread in this can be huge, but it's a lot of fun because there's, you're kind of trying to read people like, I wonder if they're, are they going for the orange? Are they going to throw out that highest coin? But you don't know. You only know that they bid with 3 out of 5 coins and you don't know which ones they used. So there's some reading of people going on there and just a lot of different neat scoring mechanisms that happen. So that's Nidavellir by...
How do you spell that?
Wow, you would ask that. Nidavellir. It sounds pretty good.
I don't know if that's true, but it just sounded like it can't be.
I think it's Norse mythology, maybe.
Nidavellir. Oh, sounds like it should be a TV show.
I think I found it. Thanks. Yeah.
Amazon Prime.
Nidavellir.
Yeah.
Good
so
job.
Right.
Dan.
Wow.
Wow, he got it.
Yes.
No. I would not have gotten that right. I'd been like, it starts with an N.
Yeah.
But I guess it came out in 2020. New game. Yeah. I don't know. It just never crossed my path.
And there's a game, a sequel called Thingvellir.
Thingvellir.
Yeah.
All right.
That came out.
Huh. So, yeah. I've heard people talking about the game. I haven't played it, but the people who have played it and talk about it on social media give it a lot of praise.
Yeah.
That they really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Cool. The last Pegasus Spiel game that we're going to talk about today, the third one for our podcast.
And this is not our topic of today.
It's not.
But Pegasus Spiel just happens to be all the games we played.
Yeah, all the games we played recently is Kitchen Rush. So I have to be honest, I just wasn't expecting a lot from Kitchen Rush.
Yeah.
It's called Kitchen Rush.
Kitchen Rush, the theme.
So I was like, it can't be, right? So I'm expecting like a Rival Restaurants
style game. Yeah.
Or like, you know, you've played the Diner Dash on your phone or whatever. That's what I'm expecting, right?
Right.
And it is that. It is. Except for this game is a campaign, which I wasn't expecting. So like I'm opening the box going, oh, it's a campaign. This is interesting. How can this be a campaign, right? And you're just fulfilling orders and stuff. But it's actually super unique. And honestly, after we've talked about the other Pegasus Spiel games on the podcast, I'm thinking that they're 3 for 3 with the 3 games that I've seen and played.
I'm with you.
Because, so here's how this game works. You can play with up to 4 people, and each, it's a campaign, so you're kind of going to learn as you go, and the scenarios are going to increase in difficulty as you go. But the game board is like 8 puzzle pieces that all fit together, and it builds this restaurant. And the theme behind the game is you're an aspiring, what do you call a restaurant person? Chef?
Chef?
Yeah.
No, but the fancy name.
Ooh.
Gastroologist. That's not it. Don't quote me on that.
Oh, wow.
But you know
We're
what I'm talking
you.
About.
We're with you.
Okay, you're aspiring. You just got out of school. You and your partners want to open a restaurant, all the people you're playing with. And this is your base restaurant that you have. And your kind of player tokens, your meeples, if you will, are sand timers. You each get 2. And then you have these certain spots you can go in your kitchen, like the dining area, the seating area, the foyer, the pantries where the food's stored, the ovens where you cook stuff. That's, I think, all that you start with. And so basically they give you objectives. Like in the first scenario, don't let anybody leave your restaurant or something. And then you place your sand timer, obviously flip it over so the sand's going on one of the areas. That allows you to like take an order, take a card. Now you've got to fulfill that order. You can place your other sand timer in the pantry to get the items that you need. Mm-hmm. You place another sand timer runs out. You place that sand timer like on the stove to cook the items.
You have to wait for the timer to run out before you can move it.
So it's cooperative also. Cooperative also.
I know it's cooperative.
Cooperative campaign. You're trying to run the restaurant together. So they obviously have different levels of goals for how many players you're playing with. And then basically they've got all these rules. Like they give you plates and as your restaurant advances, you then get a dishwasher. Or you then get sinks, so first you have to wash your dishes. So if you serve it on a dish, you've got to then put that dish in the sink, which someone has to go there to wash the dish to flip it back to clean.
It's like actually doing dishes.
Yeah, and then like as your restaurant advances, you turn the puzzle pieces on the board over to their B side, but you only do them like one at a time or certain ones, which like give you more advanced stuff. Like get a dishwasher, you get an extra stove, you get another pantry,
Do you get to choose what you're working towards? Like you finally I've had enough of washing dishes. Yeah. I'm going to go for the upgraded,
No, you don't get dishwasher. To do that. You don't get to do that. But they give you the objective. So if we're all playing together right now, the objective might be to make 60 coins, $60. And so you get coins, obviously, by completing people's orders because they'll pay you for the food. You lose coins by not completing their order, by having the food that you get, these little carrots and broccolis and all this stuff fall off the plates on your player board. You'll lose orders. Or if you put them on the wrong plates, you'll lose their money because you served them wrong food.
It sounds stressful.
It's kind of good. I'm like playing. And so
it's real time, right?
Yeah.
Because there's timers.
Yeah. So I made it all the way to scenario 5, campaign 5 before I failed one. And I mean failed bad. Like they're like, okay, your goal is to get $10 at the end of this shift. Mm-hmm. Like, asterisk, don't run out of money. And I'm like, $10 is a long way from running out of money. Like, because it's like you're not getting that much money, like $1 or $2 type of thing. Sure. I'm like, $10 is a long way to run out of money. So that was the first one that broke it into two shifts, a day shift and a night shift.
Okay.
After the day shift, I had $5. So I'm thinking, that's perfect.
$5 more.
After the night shift, I'll have $5. I'm going to do it. After the night shift, I like owed people. Like I was like in the negative.
They came to your restaurant and you paid them. That's great.
I was like, oh man, we're going out of business for sure. Anyway, and
but now you're on 8 of 10.
No, there's only 8, so I'm on 6 of 8. I have not done 6, 7, or 8. I guess I have 3 left, and it's been actually super fun.
Cool.
Yeah, so that is Kitchen Rush from Pegasus Spiel as well.
We have we were going to talk about 2 more games, but for time, we're going to talk about 1 more from AEG. And we're not doing an official Kickstarter segment today in this podcast episode, but the one we're talking about is part of AEG's Big Game Night, which is actually currently on Kickstarter. It launched June 22nd, and it's called 10, and it is a push-your-luck numbers game, and it's very bright and colorful, but the name of the game is 10, T-E-N.
Yeah, I believe it's designed by the same team that did Point Salad.
Ooh.
So it is a lower complexity game. Kevin and I actually played it with some friends who came over from dinner. They're not really big gamers.
No, they're not gamers.
They had their teenage daughter with them. And it was just the right kind of casual
weight
to play. The husband actually said that he likes numbers.
I think he's a banker or something.
Math type games. And we're like, oh, we have something. I was like,
do you
want to
try a game that we just got?
But basically in 10, there are, I believe, 3 colors of...
There's 4 colors.
4 colors.
Blue,
4
green,
suits.
Pink, and... like yellow or something like that.
Okay, very bright colors.
Very 4
and
bright
then
colors.
The cards have numbers, and you're trying to collect
9.
Sets or run.
You're trying to do a run
of the same color. So 3, 4, 5, 6 in the same color.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen is you're going to flip a card from the deck. It's either going to be a numbered card or it's going to be a card with little tokens on them.
Dots. Yeah.
Currency.
Yeah.
And then you're going to decide, do I take that or do I flip more? if your number total value of cards goes over 10, you bust.
Whether it's numbers or dots.
So,
not a combination of the two. Well, sort of a combination of two.
When you flip over dots, it decreases the value. So if I flip a five, a number card five, and then I flip one that has three dots, my total value is now
two.
Ah.
So
I like it.
But there's eights and nines
push
in the deck.
Push your luck.
Yeah, it's pushing your luck. And you want numbered cards because the more numbered cards you get, the more possibility of runs you're getting.
Yeah.
So then I decide, am I going to flip another card or do I take either all of the numbered cards? If I do that, everyone gains currency tokens equal to the number of dots that I have showing.
Yeah.
Or do I take the dots, which gives me currency.
And no one else currency.
And no one else.
Oh.
If you bust.
Some of the cards will go to a market. And then later in your turn, if you don't bust, you can spend your dots, your tokens, to buy a card. So if it's a six, I have to spend six tokens to buy that. So
if you bust, everyone can get the currency still, and you get nothing other than like a little bust token, which is like three. You get three currency, basically. There's one more part of the game. There are wild cards in the deck. There's like wild numbers that are basically any color. And then there's wild numbers that are basically any number but a certain color. There's a couple that are like any color, any number. Anytime one of those flips, you immediately stop and you go through one bidding round. People can bid one time to try and get that one card.
For the tokens, the currency that they have.
Oh.
So you're like, I'm going to be five, but if someone outbids you, there's no like coming back to you. Back. You can't come back in. It's just one time around. So it's pretty fun because you're like, how much should I spend for that one card? Oh, I really need that card. Yeah.
So, yeah.
We played it, actually. We played it, and they're like, let's play it again. It was just like kind of cool.
When,
when like non-gamers like say, oh,
they're ready to play again right away.
Yep.
Yeah, so you flip a low number, you flip the currency dots at the beginning. You're like, yeah, yeah. Your first one you flip is like an eight, and you're going, oh, do I just take this one card?
Yeah.
Or do I
keep flipping?
Hope that it's a two or less.
Yeah.
Oh,
and the game's over when you get through the deck of cards. So it's a pretty like 20-minute game.
Cool.
20, 25 minutes. So
yeah, it plays 1 to 5 players, about 20, 30 minutes.
You guys ever have that with somebody you knew who's newer to the hobby where like they play something and they're really into it and they're like, oh, we should go get this. And like you're excited for them.
The teen was like, we want to buy this now.
Right,
like,
right.
Well, like, it's not going to be available right now.
Well, yeah, there's that. But I played with some people recently. Their exposure to board gaming has basically been Catan and the more classic stuff.
Sure.
And we played Escape from Queen Games, and they loved it. And then we played Atlantis from, Mayfair.
You're talking about the Atlantis from Elf Creek Games or Atlantis from...
It's a different Atlantis.
Oh, a different Atlantis. Cool.
But after both of them, they're like, these are awesome. We want to buy these now. And I had to say, okay, like, these are good games. I'm not denying that. But pump the brakes a little bit. Maybe play a little bit more before you just start buying everything.
No. Let them buy everything, Dan.
Just direct them to their friendly local game
store. That's right.
It's such a big gaming world out there, and they're just getting their toes wet.
Right.
Like, hold up.
Yeah.
Make sure you know what you are excited about by playing a few extra games and then go for it.
But one of the benefits is you've already taught them the game, so now they don't have to like learn something new.
That is true.
They can just buy it and then play it and share it with others.
Very true.
Well, why don't we jump into our shout out to our episode sponsor?
This episode is sponsored by Loen Games. Their game Deliverance is on Kickstarter right now, and we actually have an interview with the designer, Andrew Loen.
Hey!
Welcome to the house.
What's up, man? I'm excited to be here.
It's good. It's good. Andrew, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll jump into your Kickstarter.
Yeah. I'm a dad of five, a huge lifelong nerd, and I'm a four-stripe brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is kind of like human chess. It's like a board game, but using people as the pieces. I love playing games, and I like making them. So
awesome. And I heard one baby on the way.
That's right. Yeah. hopefully, you know, we've got a live Kickstarter right now for Deliverance, and my wife is about 8 months pregnant. So if that baby comes in the final 48 hours, it's going to be chaos. So,
wait, two deliverances.
Yes. Yeah, deliverance during deliverance. And my brother-in-law is about to have a baby. Well, his wife's about to have a baby.
Right.
Scheduled induction for Thursday. So it's going to be wow. a grand old time.
And they, do they live nearby you?
Yeah, about 15 minutes away. So
that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we have you on the show to talk about Deliverance, the game of spiritual warfare. So I know this has a long history. You've been working on this game for how long now?
5 years. Over Woo. 5 years.
Wow.
It's been a
5 years. Crazy. That's crazy. So I know we don't have like 10, 15 minutes here, so we can't talk about all 5 years within there. But let's do some highlights. Like what was the creative juices in your mind? Like, I want to do this. What was the start of it?
Well, so the key, I guess, was really as a Christian myself, I read the Bible all the time and I read these epic stories about angels and demons and that kind of thing. And that had never been explored in a theme before, really. You know, I mean, there are angels in games, there are demons in games, but never really from, I guess you could say, like the Judeo-Christian view of angels, which is really the dominant view that we get all of this stuff about angels. You know, you've got cool stuff in the Apocrypha, you've got cool stuff in the book of Jude and whatever about angels and demons battling, Michael the Archangel battling mm-hmm. with Satan over the body of Moses and all sorts of other things like that. And I thought, why isn't this in a game? I want to play a game like that. I want to be an epic angel slaying demons by the power of God. That's what I want to do. And so I made a game and it feels like that. So didn't start out that way, but it does now.
So tell us a little bit about the game itself. So what kind of a game is it?
So it's a cooperative tactical, kind of a tactical combat dungeon crawler for 1 to 4 players. So you play elite angels in the army of heaven, and you have come down to this small, modern-day, backwoodsy little town called Fallbrook that is rife with demonic activity. And you suspect that one of your former angelic allies, now a mighty fallen prince, is leading the armies of darkness from the shadows of this small town. And it's your mission to root that demon out and send him to the abyss to await his final judgment. But something strange is happening in this town. It seems as though the evils of the human realm are bleeding into the spiritual realm and manifesting as darkness. So this is kind of the, I guess it really creates the tension between tactical combat between angels and demons on the field, and then these darkness cards that are going to come out and threaten you, and you can't deal with those by, you know, striking them down with your sword. So it's been getting a lot of really great feedback and praise from, you know, a lot of reviewers and whatnot. And it's just extremely fun. It's very, very challenging. So it's fully co-op, and there are multiple difficulty levels that will not only make the demons more resilient and deal more damage and that sort of thing, but it actually changes, like we have cards that fully change their behavior. So it's, you know, the game controls the demons. All the players control angels. And it's, you know, you've got these saints kind of caught between.
So tell me about player count. So if it's fully co-op, can you play by yourself?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's one to four players.
One to four players, okay.
Yeah, and we have what I call a true solo mode. So I love playing solo. It's one of my favorite ways to play. And one of the things that always makes me, you know, it's kind of annoying is like when they ask you to play two players, but as a solo player, it's like, oh, yeah, this game's solo. Just play two players. It's like, well, that's not really solo, is it? And so we created this mode for Deliverance that allows you to play one angel against the darkness. And it really challenges you in a different way because there's only one target for all the demons now. And so it becomes a little bit more puzzly and very, very interesting to try to not only, you know, survive, but to beat the higher difficulty levels. It's a lot of fun.
So up to four players, and with other dungeon crawlers, is it more of like a discussion around the table? Like, is it turn-based, or is it like sort of they can, you can change up turn order from round to round. How does that all work?
So you can change up turn order from round to round. You have, as you know, a group of players, you have the way the so I'll back up. So in the game, you're going to alternate actions between angels and demons. And the kind of the you know, if you look at a game like Gloomhaven, a lot of people compare it to Gloomhaven, at least with the way that it feels.
Okay.
Your decision space is really in the way that you use your cards. Like, what top action will I use on one card? Which bottom action will I use on another card? And what's, you know, what will my speed be so that I'll go fast or slow or whatever, right? And so in Deliverance, you have an initiative order and you have actions that you get to take. So the initiative order is determined by the players. So players will take this gigantic initiative coin and give somebody, in essence, the first player token, and play proceeds clockwise from that point. But every round you get to decide who goes first. And the decision space, as I mentioned, is that you're taking actions. So you get two actions on your turn. And there are other actions that are called free actions that don't count against that two action total. And with a clever combination, you can do some really cool stuff. You know, the game basically challenges you to find a way to abuse the mechanics in order to whip the demons a little bit easier. And so it's a lot of fun. The way the characters kind of combine and, you know, the way they feel, it's almost... It's more like playing a video game on a table. It reminds me a lot of League of Legends. I don't know if you're familiar with League.
I'm familiar with it. I don't play it, but familiar.
Okay. So yeah, I don't play either because I would not have, I just think I wouldn't have time for anything if I did. But so the idea behind League is that you have a character that is kind of kitted out to do something really, really well. And it might be really good at one thing and kind of bad at another, but you have other characters that shore up those weaknesses. Maybe you're a good tank and another person's a great damage dealer and another is a great healer. But in Deliverance, there's not one clear cut role for each character. Mm-hmm. You've got multiple roles that each character can fill. So Azrael, the Angel of Death, you can play him like the roguelike Assassin's Creed, slaying people with his Reaper Scythe. You can play him like the, you know, ranged plague turret, wanting to sit behind and just lob plague bombs at everything. Or you can play him as Azrael the healer, which is a really weird thing because he's the Angel of Death. So he's kind of, he's good guy Azrael, you know, he's a good guy Angel of Death. Yeah. So every character has a really interesting way to, that you can build the character. And that's what kind of allows for a ton of replayability in it itself.
Sounds like an epic game. What's the normal game length?
It's actually only 1 to 2 hours. So a lot of people have been saying that they love the depth of strategy. And, you know, really, I guess you could say complexity in the, you know, strategic decisions you can make and all of that. But there really aren't a ton of rules, not a ton of rules that you have to remember. And that's kind of nice. We have it's like a 32-page rule book that's basically half of it is pictures, gigantic, massive pictures. And so I think it's a really elegant rule system. That's why it took so long to develop.
Let's talk about those pictures. The illustrations are just amazing, and just the flow. The illustrator did a wonderful job. Tell me a little bit about how you found this person, and just the design. The design of how that all came about.
Yeah, well, we must have interviewed at least 60 artists and, you know, at various stages, you know, and I saw this painting that I loved. It was this gigantic red dragon coming out of a big vortex with angels and demons fighting, you know, and so I sent a message to that person. Ended up that they were like the senior concept artist of Lego, living in the Netherlands, like doing all the cool stuff. Like,
really?
Yeah, okay. We're friends now. He does like Lego elves, Lego Harry Potter, all the stuff like that. He's the artist that puts that stuff on the box. And he's like, dude, you couldn't afford me. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right. So, but he said, I've got a buddy who I went to college with that is great and does freelance. And I think he might be a good fit. That's how I found Dan Maynard. So, yeah, so we've worked probably 2.5 or 3 years just on the art. And the art, there's such depth to the art. One of the things, you know, that we haven't really touched on yet, but that I'd love to, is that this is a Christian fantasy game. And whenever people hear Christian game, you know, Christian anything, you know, it's like, oh, it's a slightly worse re-theme of an already existing game, or it's just not innovative, or it's meant to educate or teach instead of be an awesome game. And I knew that I was going to be fighting an uphill battle. I was absolutely going to need to prove that this was something that was game first and a really incredible thing on its own. So I needed to make a statement with the game, and the art was really the had to be the centerpiece of all of it. So we have really incredible art that we spent a long time on. Everything is the way it is on purpose. There's nothing that is the way it is simply because it's cool, but it also fits the theme. It fits the lore. It fits this epic fantasy feel that we wanted everything to have. And there really is a lot of depth to every piece.
So let's talk about the sculpts, because this isn't just a just people moving around a map. This is the miniatures moving around. Yeah. Tell me about that. I'm assuming as a first time creator of board games, this is a whole new realm of trying to learn that process.
Yeah, actually, I told my fans, you know, we had maybe 2,100 people in a Facebook group and let's say 4,000 people on an email list, and you know, leading into our Kickstarter launch. And I told them that we were not going to do miniatures. We're not doing miniatures. And they told me we want miniatures, and yeah, they won. So we actually are working with somebody who works actively for Dungeons and Dragons, designing sculpts for them, and a couple of other big names like Warhammer 40K. And so they've done a lot of work for these types of companies. And so we contracted with them to do miniatures for our angels. But I didn't want, you know, I didn't want just like angels. I wanted them to be awesome. I wanted to be really proud of what they were. And so I think that what we've produced is extremely unique and offers a little bit of a, I mean, you know, a lot of people are saying we want to use them for Dungeons and Dragons, you know, like Celestials and stuff. And they work at that scale too. So, but they really do look beautiful and they feel chunky and nice, like in the hand.
Yeah, they do look good. Let's move to the Kickstarter campaign. Congratulations. I should have said that at the very beginning of this segment here, but congratulations on blowing out your base level and working through what looks like a lot of stretch goals right now. Tell me about the Kickstarter campaign. What, you know, where you've been, what it looks like for the rest. How many, at the time of this recording, it looks like there's a couple weeks left. By the time this airs, it'll be a little over a week left. But tell us where we're at.
So it's been, I guess, 2 weeks. And we're at $215,000, over $215,000 raised. We ended up raising way more than I expected. Our funding goal was $39,000, and we have we just smashed that. I think we've raised that in 8 minutes, and it's nuts. We ended up raising like $140,000 in the first day, and it was just incredible. And actually, funny enough, that made us the largest Christian media crowdfunded project aside from The Chosen. So just by itself, which is, you know, not, I guess, a hard award to win, you know, but maybe now it'll be harder.
Yeah, that's right. You set the bar high.
Yeah. And, you know, we've got a lot of people from all faiths that backed us. And that's really, I think, one of the magic pieces that allowed our Kickstarter to be so successful as a first-time designer. You know, first time publisher going to Kickstarter and saying, hey, we have a thing. Yes, it's very unique and all, but it's also not going to embarrass you when you bring it to the table. That's really important. I mean, as I know, Kevin, you're a Christian and
yeah,
you've got probably you play with lots of non-Christian people like I do. And
yeah,
you want a game that you can just bring to the table and have fun. Like, we're here to kind of escape reality a little bit. We're not really here to like discuss politics or religion or whatever at the table. I mean, you know, maybe we do that like with around games, but games are meant to bring people together, right? And so
sure,
that was what we did with Deliverance. And so we have, you know, I'd say I joke and I say like half of my email list are pastors and priests, and the other half are Satanists and atheists and everyone in between that are like, we love this thing. There is no God, but we like this, you know? So we ended up really kind of striking a chord with a lot of people, and we've knocked down like 15 stretch goals. We've got you know, at the moment we've got 8 angels unlocked with their miniatures and everything like that. We have a bunch of cards and other things that we've unlocked too. And, and you know, like quality of life improvements and that kind of thing. But
looks like the next one is the back of the darkness board as different art. So that looks cool.
Yeah. So we got some feedback from actually some reviewers that, hey, you know, there's a lot of blue on the table and, you know, which is purposeful because there are all sorts of other, you know, contrasting colors that go there, you know, but
I gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. So we thought, well, let's add an alternate art on the backside to have like that gold really pop a lot more. And so that's what a lot of our people wanted that. But man, I'm excited. We've got a 9th angel to reveal.
So
it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, each of our angels represent a different culture because, you know, heaven is filled with every tribe, nation, kindred and language or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's what it says. Right. So we are our angels in essence represent good looking people with wings, you know. And so our next angel is actually you guys will be the first ones to hear the Tantrum House podcast. It's going to be the first.
There it is.
To hear. Our next angel is from China. Our
cool.
next angel is from China. So
very, very cool.
Everybody's trying to figure out what he does, what his name is, you know, that kind of thing. But I'll tell you guys, he is a wushu fighter that speaks with his fists, and he is from China.
Very cool. Well, that's exciting to hear and exciting to see the success of the game on Kickstarter. Congratulations again. And if you're listening to this right now, there is only like a little over a week left. So go on Kickstarter, check out, search for Deliverance board game and check out the game here from Andrew. Any final thoughts or words before we say goodbye?
You know, I am excited to be here. I would say one of the things that a lot of people ask is it going to be preachy or do I need to know Bible in order to be good at this? And the answer is no and no. You don't need to know the Bible. However, you'll get Bible verses that act as highly thematic and appropriate flavor text on the back of cards, but nothing is essential to read. It just adds to the theme. And that's, I guess, one thing I want to stress is that the theme and the mechanics are intricately woven together in a way that you couldn't just retheme this into another game. It is such a unique experience. And I guess overall the experience is that you feel like this epically powerful angel slaying demons left and right that is about to die. You feel like we're about to die. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Andrew, and best of luck as the campaign comes to an end and all the work that has to go into it, all the work that's already gone into it. But I know this is just the beginning of a lot of work as well. So
yes, it is. And I can't wait to dive into it. I mean, just the community around the game has just fired me up so much. We have so many, we have people playing on Tabletop Simulator. You can get it on Tabletop Simulator right now. And we have hundreds of people that can teach you the rule book on our Discord server.
Cool.
So yeah, just come on by.
Awesome. Thanks again, Andrew.
You got it. Thanks, Kevin. I really appreciate being here.
Bye. It was great having Andrew on the show. First time creator, and he's blown it out of the water on Kickstarter, so definitely check out Deliverance on Kickstarter for just a few more days, so definitely check that out. Well, why don't we jump into our topic for the episode, our favorite escape room type board games. So there's a lot out there. I know Melissa and I played quite a few of them.
I love them all. And, well, most of them.
And actually part of this topic, we have some new things to talk about too, right, Melissa? Okay, cool. So, Jonah.
Are there some new announcements coming? New games that we should know about right now?
New games?
You heard it here first.
You may have heard it here first.
You may have. Our latest news episode. Let's talk about escape room games. So, quite honestly, I have not played very many of these.
Okay.
I am attracted to the idea, but I've just never done it.
I know you've played some exit games.
I have played one or two exit games, which I enjoy.
Those are the ones where you actually like destroy.
You destroy it and then you can't really play it again. So I'm not, I mean, you can, but you can't.
Right.
I'm not super, I don't like that much.
Okay.
I feel like you paid money for it. You should be able to play it more than once.
Do you not like?
It's a lot cheaper than going to an escape room.
This is true. Escape rooms are super expensive.
Is it the destruction you don't like, or just the fact that, like, once you play it and know the puzzles?
It's the destruction. I'm not, okay. I'm not, I want to destroy what I have guy.
Right.
Gotcha. Yeah. You want to keep what you have.
Yeah, I want to keep it. Okay. I want it to
have
be
Have you
nice.
Played any of the unlock?
I have not played okay. any of the unlock. Okay. I watched Dan for half a moment play Break-In.
Okay. And that's a resettable one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
There's a different series. There's exit games, there's unlock games, and then there's the break-in games.
Yep. Yeah, so that's... it is kind of a one-time play thing in that once you really know the story, I guess it's not as much fun, but you could bring it out with other people who didn't know it and right. kind of walk them through it. And most of the times, at least in the two I've played, I didn't remember the solutions off the top of my head.
No,
I
cool.
may have known where to look, but I kind of had to go
what
through
what was the two?
Process.
It was Break-In Alcatraz and Break-In...
Area 51.
Area 51.
I think they're coming out with a third one that's like something... It's an Incan temple or something like
they're
that.
They're very different. They're definitely unique, and it seems thematic. Yeah, they were able to bring sure. the theme in.
Yep. Absolutely.
And did you've played the other unlock games and exit games?
I think I looked at an exit game, but I haven't played it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think the exit game I played was the Sacred Temple. Does that sound right? That sounds right to me. The Sacred Temple.
There's got to be one.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, mm-hmm. I think I agree with Jonas. Like, I don't like destroying things, but it does sometimes make some really interesting puzzles that you couldn't get if you weren't destroying things.
Yeah.
I've played some escape room games, and I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'm really bad at remembering the names of things, so I'm not going to remember all the names of these games. But I've played some that have more physical elements to them, mm-hmm. and I really enjoy some of the physical parts of it. Makes you feel more like you're in an escape room.
Sure.
There's one, the werewolf-themed one.
Oh, the werewolf experiment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that was fun. I remember getting an early prototype of that game.
Yes, that was years ago.
Yes, it was a long time ago.
Now they're selling that in like Walmart.
Oh, Target. Yeah. My mom picked it up and played it with folks from her office, and cool. they super enjoyed it. But I remember opening something physically, jumping out at me, and me screaming and running across
the
room.
Oh, yes. I do remember the
Yeah. So that was really
fun. So the physicality of the actual product is what really intrigues you in that for that type of game.
I think so. I think that's a really fun element that I enjoy. Or like you find out, oh, I need to use this box lid. Who would have thought mm-hmm. I was going to need to use the box lid for
well,
something?
Exit games do that too.
I know, yeah, but yeah. I mean, yeah. like I like
yeah, you
that,
like that. So
that
in
part
it,
of it,
I do feel that. I think Melissa and I played most of the exit games and many of the unlocks, and we have played a lot of the other types of games too. I would say what escape room type games do is that they're pulling from those experiences that you would feel in an escape room game, and they're trying to make it feel like you are trying to escape a room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they do that through the physicality, through the logic puzzles, through other types of puzzles.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of why I like the break-in games. Now, I haven't played these other ones, but it's a box that opens up, and you're kind of following this path of whatever the storyline is, and then that box opens again, and there are things, you know, you have to pick up the box and kind of look, can you look through a window and see some clue through this window, or you know, what is it that's there? And it felt a lot more like, I guess, maybe being in the room than just a bunch of cards on the table.
Yeah. I'd say that about the break-in rooms, too.
Yeah, so we've mentioned exit. That has usually physical elements. If you play it the way that it's supposed to be done, you're going to be cutting things, folding things, so destroying elements. Usually you have unlock. That has an app that you is required to play.
Yeah,
so
it's required.
That's usually just cards in a box, an app. They're sometimes are a few extra elements.
And I would say that they have evolved way more mm-hmm. with the app and what you're interacting with a lot more in the newer unlocks than the older ones.
Yeah, I would say personally, I like both the exit and the unlocks. The exit for me sometimes can be a little frustrating because you know how to solve it, but the physical element, like doesn't fails. Work so well, mm-hmm. or you're supposed to fold it and it's not quite right, or you're like, I think this is what they're going for, but physically I'm just having trouble mm-hmm. doing it. The unlocks have done a lot of interesting things with the app, especially the newer ones. So I've really enjoyed that integration with the cards. I think unlocks sometimes are a little easier to understand what do I need to do next.
Although I will say sometimes when it integrates with the app sometime, or with your phone, it's trying sometimes to do things and it's a little hokey. So there's things that it wants you to do. And if you don't know what you're supposed to do on your phone app, it sometimes can be a little disconnect in there. But overall, they do a pretty good job. So the newest ones that have just come out from Exit from Cosmos is the puzzle line of escape room type games. And I think that was the one that Jonah was talking about, the Sacred Temple. Is that the puzzle one?
Yes.
Okay.
So those are pretty new.
Yeah, brand new ones.
I feel like when I said the Sacred Temple, you looked at me like that wasn't the right name. So I'm desperately trying to find it on my phone.
It does sound right now. Sacred Temple, okay, yeah. If it's the puzzle one.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. So that's, I was like, wow, you did the newest one? Awesome.
So when we say puzzle, we mean jigsaw puzzle.
Yes.
Because obviously there are puzzles.
They all have puzzles in them.
They all do have puzzles. This is actual jigsaw, four jigsaw puzzles in it, and you are doing one jigsaw puzzle at a time, and it's leading you through the story to actually complete the tests and things like that. I think the combination of the jigsaw puzzle plus the escape room type thing was ingenious, and I personally like jigsaw puzzles, so I liked the combination of the two.
Yeah, we played it with four people, and sometimes four can feel like a little much on some of the escape rooms, depending on if there's just a little booklet to look at or a couple cards. But with the puzzle aspect, I think it really helped have people do something tactile.
What do you think, Jonah?
I liked it. So same thing. I really like jigsaw puzzles. Like I normally do one once, twice, three times a year.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so I loved it. I think as I'm thinking now through my experience, I think what it is that I play it, I have a great time. I think this is really cool. And I want to play it with more than, like, I think of people in my head, like my friends, like, oh, I should play this with them, mm-hmm. but I've already played it, so right. I don't want to do it. When really I'm thinking to myself, am I just being cheap? Should I just go get another one and then do it with them?
Right, there's
you know
other,
what I mean?
Right.
So I think that's what it is, because then I go, that's why I'm saying earlier, like, oh, I don't really like it. Well, I do like it, but it's like, I did it, so I don't normally want to get it back out to the table with a new group of people because I already did it. So they might love it and have fun, but it's at the same time, it's like you're like moderating instead of
Well, there's so many exit ones, and there's actually just the one that we played, that we all played, the Sacred Temple one. There's actually, I think, at least one or two more other jigsaw puzzle ones. I don't know the names of them are, but Melissa's going to probably look them up while I'm rambling here. And there's dozens of the unlock ones games. So I would say that they're most popular. They've really pushed out Space Cowboys has pushed out the unlock games and Cosmos with exit games. And now with their new line with the jigsaw puzzle, Melissa has the other names.
The Deserted Lighthouse is the other one in English so far.
Cool. Wow, only two.
Wow. They're brand new. So I think they're going to be pushing more of these out. So
they're good.
So what do you think about games like Time Stories that has some really puzzly elements to it and
escape room type games?
Yeah,
I would put that more in the mystery, I think, personally.
Yeah, that's probably true. I know the first scenario that we played of Time Stories, I think it's the first scenario.
Yeah, the asylum.
The asylum felt very puzzly and very much like an escape room type feel.
It had some feelings of that, yeah.
Yeah, I think I would call them maybe narrative games, narrative adventure. But yeah, I don't think I would put that in this category. Some other escape lines that we haven't talked about, there's the Coded Chronicles.
From
the Op, I believe.
Those are brand new. There's one Scooby-Doo that's already out, and there's more on the way, which we cannot reveal information about.
Oh, I thought, has the other one not been released yet? I don't know. There are others.
There are other ones coming, and you'll see them on our channel.
But yeah, we have a how to play video for the Scooby-Doo one. I would put that one as very good for families.
Yes.
I think it's fine for adults too, because Kevin and I played it, the two of us, but it's the way it is, I think families could really do it. I think Will and his kids played it and had a good time.
The mystery at Stargazer's Manor is another. They have a few in that line. The escape room, it's where they have the sort of wheel that does have a little feel very close to the exit games that has also has a wheel. And then there's Deckscape, which is out there. And I was going to say, would you put the adventure games from Cosmos in the same in this thing, Melissa? What are your thoughts?
They're on the edge.
They're on the edge.
Because
like Doodle Dungeon on the edge.
I would say
Doodle Dungeon's not on the edge.
Yeah, the adventure games, it's not like an
Most
escape
of the time,
room.
You
it's,
are trying to escape.
Okay.
It's more of a narrative
sure, story.
Adventure, choose your own adventure ish mm-hmm. with
You've
some
played
puzzles.
One of these, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Did you play the volcano one? Or no?
That sounds right.
There's the volcano island one, the
it's the
dungeon.
Monochrome Inc. and the dungeon one.
Monochrome Inc., yes. Yep. Those are the three.
That are out in English.
Yes.
So, this could bleed in between the lines, but they call it an escape room, and that's 1876 Black Brim. We looked at that, too. But that's
what
from...
What is that?
Puzzling Pursuits.
I've never seen that one.
It's super cool.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it, but is it's... It,
did you play the prototype or an actual?
No, it was an actual thing.
I missed yes, this.
I know. But it's Victorian era, and they send you just Ooh, lots good. Of... You open up the box, and it's a letter that's kind of Sherlock
I
Holmes.
I do remember this now.
Yeah.
Keep talking.
Yeah, and so it's... You look at puzzles, and it's basically this evil mastermind saying, hey, I've kidnapped your small-town police force, and I've hidden them somewhere. You have to find out where they are.
The whole police force?
Yeah, it's like six people.
Okay.
Small English town, you know. So you're this detective, and the mastermind has just sent you, like, Victorian-era paintings, and you have to figure out what they mean. And, you know, some cipher, and if you turn the wheel just right, it tells you some information. So you do that, and then it opens up, like, you find out where they are. And then the second phase of it is figuring out how to get them out of the room before everybody dies. Really, really interesting. And I just saw they have a second one, La Familia.
Mm.
The family.
Yeah.
For all those who speak English. Oh, speaking of that, I'm actively learning Spanish on Duolingo.
Oh,
as a
nice.
Side note, I'm not telling Chantel.
Because
I'm trying to learn it.
She's going to start talking Spanish and be like, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I do that now.
I'm only
then.
2 days in. I got a 2-day streak, though.
Oh, now okay. then
you're
work.
Only 2 days in. You yeah. got La Familia, though.
Yeah, the family. You saw how I got that? Yeah.
There are nice. A couple of ladies at work that speak Spanish, and so I'll be sitting there working on a computer, and they'll say something, and I recognize one word, and so I say, like, one or two things in Spanish, and they're just like, wait a second. Do you know what we've been saying? Uh-huh. Like, no.
Uh-huh. They look at you like,
yeah.
Oh.
Melissa's got another one.
Oh, this is a very different, unique, maybe, type of escape room. It's Mystery House. In this, you actually use the box.
From Cranium Creations.
And it has a bunch of slots. And the cards are the slots that you put into the grid. And when you start out, basically, you look around the box, and it's like the outside of
yeah, basically
a
the
house
side of the
mansion.
Box, not the top cool. of the bottom, the sides yeah. of the box. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, so you put the box lid and bottom together, and it makes this grid that you slot cards into. It has an app that you're using, so you'll look at card A5 and see that there's a tree on it. So then you'll interact with the app, and it might ask you a question about that card. And maybe you say, oh, I see something shining in the tree. And it may say, oh, you found something, and you get an item. Eventually, you're taking these cards out of the slots, and you can see through the box. Like, oh, now I can see into another room.
That's cool.
In mm-hmm. here. I believe that there are three scenarios. There were two that came in the base game.
Mm, there's a Western. The Western one's the newest one.
And then there's an expansion. I'm so on the fence with this one because it is very unique and I really enjoyed it, but the app is a little clunky and it's translated.
Yeah, I would say if I was a, I believe it's Italian, is probably the Maybe. the publishers. I think Cranio is from Italy. I would say if I was Italian, I think I would love this game. But a lot of the translation issues make this game not worth it for me personally. I've had all three games have had major issues. So
translation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of it is clunky language, but there was one or two things where you had to identify an object and they used a term that just is not familiar in English.
Oh, okay.
And so you're like, I don't know what they're talking about.
And sometimes it's just like what you're trying to do in the game, personally. So,
but it's an experience. It was interesting. I don't know that I'd be like telling people, oh, you must go get it. Yeah. But if you love escape rooms and want something that is different.
Right. But if you're new into the world of escape rooms, I would definitely check out the exits and the unlocks. Those are going to be probably the cheapest, $15-$20. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have the most variety out there. So
yeah. And if you're a Star Wars fan, Unlock has come out with a Star Wars 3-pack.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that these are easier than a lot
probably
of
the most
thin.
Easy.
So it could be a good entry point, especially if you really like the Star Wars theme.
Nice.
Well, any other final thoughts or should we go to our after party?
I'll just throw this in because you guys were talking about puzzles.
Oh, go for it.
So one time in college, I got a puzzle and I put it together.
Without the box.
Flipped it over. No, I used the box. But then I wrote a note to my then girlfriend, now wife, on the back of the puzzle.
Oh my, how romantic.
And then she didn't see it.
At first she just put it together. And then I was like, did you see anything on the back of it?
Why would anybody flip a puzzle over?
Right.
Well, you pull it out though, and you see, like, I put writing on every single piece.
Oh.
So I think you'd see it.
Oh, as in, like, when you were flipping all of them over at the beginning, when you dump them out, you see there's writing all over it.
Wasn't an escape room. I wasn't trying to, like, trap her or anything, but there you go.
Because you're married now.
Well, hey.
There you go.
Is that how you, like, asked her out or asked her to marry you?
I think it was just, like, you're so thoughtful. Wonderful. I love you.
It was just thoughtful.
You know.
Oh.
Every piece.
It was just sweet. Okay.
Yeah, little did Nan know. Now it backfires because he hasn't done anything like that since college.
So if you ever want a challenge, put together a 500-piece puzzle and then try and get writing on every single piece on the back.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
That'd be tough. Well, thank you for sticking with us on today's show. Like I said, stick with us for the after party if you'd like to hear us talk about the first two episodes of the new Loki show from Disney Plus. But without further ado, we're going to say goodbye. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.
All right. If you're sticking with us, you will be spoiled about the first two episodes of Loki from Disney Plus. I was excited personally about this show, more excited than Falcon and Winter Soldier.
So I actually was not excited because I did not watch any trailers because Falcon and Winter Soldier made me so upset. I just assumed Loki was going to be bad. However, I did tune in first week, Wednesday. Show was so good. Got right back as excited as I was for WandaVision. How great. What a good show.
It is.
What a good show.
Just a side note, the music is fantastic.
I need to rewatch now because I haven't been paying attention to that.
It fits so well.
I need to watch again and appreciate
great
the music
soundtrack.
Apparently.
Okay. Cool.
I am two things. I'm happy. Were you telling me, Dan, about Owen Wilson? You were saying, was that you? Ryan says,
Tell us what Ryan said.
Whoa, I was really nervous about Owen Wilson being in the show.
That. Oh, that was you?
Yeah. But now I think he's fitting his role well, and I agree with you 100%. Yeah. I wasn't nervous because I didn't watch any previews.
Yeah,
but when I saw him,
he's usually
like,
a goofy character.
Owen Wilson might be.
Well, Night of the Museum.
Might be.
Yeah.
No, that's not Owen. That's Ben Stiller. Is that Owen Wilson?
Owen Wilson's in Knight of the Museum.
Yeah. Oh.
As well. But he's generally
like
that
cowboy or something.
Yeah, just that kind of goofy comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I feel like they've given him license to kind of be Owen Wilson within this role.
Sure.
Like the ways that he whispers at people, like it just fits in with a lot of other roles that he's had, and his inflections on things. And come on, man, I've studied your life. You have literally stabbed people in the back like 57 times or whatever it is.
Oh, that was good. It's like, oh, I definitely won't do it again because I've done it so many times. It's just boring now.
Oh,
there's
man.
Some good comedic moments.
I feel like the where I feel like the story could go or will go. I like the mystery that it's already brought. I like the premise of Loki. I really did enjoy the WandaVision, so I like what that was.
So far, WandaVision has been my favorite of the TV series.
Yeah, I liked WandaVision. For some reason, Falcon and Winter Soldier was like, it was more of like, I don't know, was it like a more of like an action movie with social commentary, and then
heavily social commentary.
And then I feel like Loki is basically bringing it more into the fantastical realm.
Yeah, I think Falcon and Winter Soldier would have been better as a movie.
Sure.
Yes.
Because it was just too slow in the pacing with all of those episodes.
And I didn't feel like there was any mystery really with it.
Sure.
I feel like the one thing they tried to pull off as a mystery was who's the power broker, but by episode two,
we all knew
who the power broker was.
I will say though, I
didn't. Ryan pointed it out to me. I hadn't quite figured it out. I probably would have figured it out pretty fast. But Ryan,
I'm not saying.
Was,
I mean,
she's a power broker. Yeah,
I enjoyed Falcon and Soldier, but between the three now, it's at the bottom.
I will rewatch WandaVision.
Two episodes
I'm sure
into
re-watch Loki.
It's at the bottom already.
No, no, no. Falcon and Winter Soldier. Okay.
I agree with you.
Loki. What do you think? Loki's better than WandaVision?
Sorry? Not yet.
Oh, okay.
Not yet. WandaVision. WandaVision had us hooked.
I know.
You were out here for WandaVision.
Yeah. But
well,
if I'm comparing,
it was so mysterious.
Yeah.
Like it was for so long.
Was,
you were like, "What is happening
they,
in this show?"
They knew what they were doing.
But if I'm comparing first two episodes of the shows, Loki's are way better.
Oh, yeah.
I agree. Well, the first two episodes they were
like black and white.
They were the old school stuff.
They released the two first episodes of WandaVision together, which was an excellent idea.
Because
if that had been just the first episode. They would have. Nobody would have come back for the additional episodes.
Yep. All right. Well, let's talk about the episodes. Loki.
Let's
talk about Loki first. All right. So, what are your thoughts about what's happening in episode one? With
episode one.
Well, I think it's interesting knowing where the Loki character went in the movies, and now having to rewind. This is Loki in Avengers.
Right.
This is Loki before he's had a lot of that growth, and
he hasn't
bonded with any of the other characters yet. So it is a different Loki.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, his thoughts because he got captured, sort of, from the Time Agency. What are your thoughts about the Time Agency? Is that interesting to you? Or
yeah, I so I didn't pay attention to the comics at all. I couldn't tell if they're following the comics or not.
I have no idea.
So when I saw the Time Agency, I was like, okay, I'm fine with it. Like I'm fine with it. Maybe all the other TV shows and stuff we're watching have prepped us for this, but I was fine with it. I definitely want to see who's in charge. The three monkey looking guys. I want to see them. The timekeepers. I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready for them.
But
I already know they're going to wait till episode 6, 7, whatever it is.
At the end of the last
one. Before they tell us, which I'm fine with.
And are
like,
they
that's
actually
more,
in charge?
Right. That's more mystery for me. Like, I already know I'm ready for that to happen, and I already know you're making me wait 5 episodes, which is cool.
Yeah.
Was it episode one where he pulled the door out with all the Infinity Stones in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was that about?
I think that was a little bit.
I think that was an attempt to show them, to show Loki, like, the things he had been searching for and the things he thought were kind of all-powerful in the universe. Mm. Like, these people are just like, oh, yes, we use this as a paperweight. We get so many of these, you know.
Because I'm guessing Infinity Stones will create a lot of branching paths that they have to go nip.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I mean.
Well, that's how this version of Loki, the version we're following, that's how he became a variant was because he snatched one of the
Infinity Stones. Yeah.
Mm, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did think about that in the movie. I was like, what happened to that guy?
Where'd he go? Where did Loki go?
When
he snatched it and disappeared.
I do like the fact that here's this time agency that has all kinds of power, and the tech they're using is so old school.
1970s.
Oh, yeah.
60s, 70s.
But it's super cool the way they pull it off. And
it's just an aesthetic. I feel it's like an artistic theme that they're using.
It's nice. I like it.
You like it, yeah.
I like the theme.
Yeah,
paper pushing and offices were just a huge thing.
Yeah.
Something that I didn't appreciate in the first episode of Loki was I really wish they hadn't told us right in the first episode that he was chasing himself. I wish that had been a little bit more of a mystery, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been neat to draw it out a little bit.
And then the episode two, we see who...
I know, already. I'm like, I don't know where this show's going.
I agree with you. They could have kept us on that for three more episodes.
But Ryan said he already knew. Ryan's like, oh yeah, I already knew he was chasing Loki. I was like, how did you know that? And he's like, oh, it was in all these clues that we saw already. I was like, oh, well.
Well, the question is the variant, the one that we're chasing, are they the bad guy? Or are they actually trying to help?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we don't know. And are they better than Loki or worse than Loki?
You mean the lady?
Yeah, Loki.
Lady Loki.
I'm so upset she doesn't look like Loki. Like, she could have at least had black hair.
Yeah.
I mean, had black hair.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Oh, she looks nothing like Loki.
I agree.
It did make me wonder in the first episode when the little kid points to the stained glass.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. I was like, that could be Loki. If he's saying that's kind of what it looked like, you've got the two horns coming out the front. I mean, I guess the other option there was maybe Mephisto. I could see Mephisto being playing
which was
in.
Hinted at WandaVision.
Oh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking when I watched it that he was just saying like, oh, it's the devil because here's a little kid in a church and they're like, well, it's obviously the devil. The devil's the one that's doing this. Like, I felt like it would have been easy to just, have that.
And I thought it was like a separate timeline where it was actually like they were worshiping.
Mm. I could see that, yeah.
Oh. Why would the church have a stained glass window of the devil?
That's what I'm saying.
Let's talk about it.
I feel like it's not like...
I'm not going to that church.
Creepy.
Sunday school.
Like, I honestly felt like it was a different timeline.
It could be, yeah.
Well, it was some... Oh, you mean a variation?
A variation, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's what I felt. Yeah. And I was like, whoa. Yeah, what is that?
Oh, I got the idea that it was more of a... some sort of parable or cautionary tale in the...
Okay.
I don't know. Everybody reacts to that differently, I guess.
What about so Owen Wilson he's middle management, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has to talk to his boss, the lady in the office there. What do you think about her? Like, what's her role in it? And then all the shelf of knickknacks, and all of a sudden at the end of the episode, she grabs one of them.
Yeah, that was sketchy. I don't know
what's going on with her. Mm.
What'd she grab?
She grabbed like a staff looking thing.
I thought at first it was one of the staffs that was like
their time weapons.
Their weapons, but I think it was different. And I'm wondering if all those things do different things.
They probably do.
Yeah.
That's why she keeps them.
They're all little mementos from some variations that they've caught.
Mm.
So I don't know what that is.
So it's only six or seven episodes, is that right?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Okay. Where do you think we'll get? So you're thinking at the end of the season, we're going to see the timekeepers.
Yeah, we'll see something.
Because that's what his goal is right now, is to meet the timekeepers.
Yeah, we'll see him.
What else is going to happen?
I don't know, but I want this to happen so bad. Whenever the next series rolls around or the next movie, I want Loki to appear in his variant jacket somewhere in the background as a blip. I want it to happen
that would be kind
somewhere.
Of fun.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious.
The next movie is the Scarlet...
Black Widow.
The Black Widow movie, which I feel like is not going to
tie in at
it's
all.
It's not going to tie
because
into anything
because it was filmed so long ago.
Yeah, it's not going to tie into anything that we've actually been watching since quarantine.
Technically, I think the Black Widow movie is sort of like a...
I thought they reworked it, though.
Is it a prequel?
Like a prequel sort of thing.
No.
Yeah. It is a prequel, but I thought they reworked it. Like,
oh, maybe.
They said they were re-editing that.
Really?
Because Madame Hydra from Falcon and Winter Soldier was supposed to be revealed in Black Widow.
That's funny.
And they went ahead and put her into
Falcon.
So now They had probably had to rework something in Black Widow.
Oh, which was pointless to me, but that was just me.
Yeah.
Well, but I will tell you, Ryan's opinion was Ryan was not at all pleased that the variant that Loki's chasing was female. And he was like, he's like, I feel like it's just so overdone. And I was like, really? What are you watching or playing or something where that's like a really overdone thing?
Oh, it's the female cast of like, I can sort of see what he's saying. I don't think it's overdone Marvel, but I can see a lot. Like,
he just thought it was so expected and normal. Like, he's like, meh. He didn't think it was that much of a twist or that exciting.
I think personally it would have been more exciting if he came face to face with himself.
That's exactly what Ryan said. I would have preferred as a viewer to not know, like, them get in a fight and not know which one was which.
Which one was which.
And not be sure who I was rooting for.
Cool. Yeah.
Yep.
It does look like there are going to be 6 episodes.
6, and we're already in 2 in?
Yep.
That stinks.
It does stink.
4 more.
And then does it tie into Multiverse of Madness at all?
Does I don't know what you're talking about. Really does.
Ryan's like, he just made the multiverse.
Right.
Or when she set off all those.
Oh, that was amazing bombs. At the end of the episode where all the time bombs were going all over. It was like,
the time bombs.
Oh, yeah. The guy at the phone's like, we have a problem.
Yeah. Exactly. It was a good scene. She also, in the grocery store, wherever they were, was like using her powers the way that you always want the bad people to use their powers.
Yeah.
Like, use them. Like, switch people. Like, do stuff that we think is cool. Yeah, yeah. And she was just doing it. Yeah. I was like, perfect. It's something's about to happen.
I thought it was interesting, too, that Loki realized what she was doing, and he made it sound like I could have thought of that and done it. So I'm not sure if that's it, but I'm not sure if it's something that Loki himself can do, because they talked about the variants all having the different Lokis all having slightly different abilities that they can do. So I don't know that this is something that Loki can do as his set of skills or not, but he made it sound like he figured out how she did it, so maybe he would be able to do it.
No. Yeah, I don't know.
The big question nobody's brought up is what's going on with Loki? Like, he just went through the time door.
Yeah.
So, Melissa, where is he?
Well, I guess he's wherever the other Loki is, right. But will he be accepted back into the Time Agency fold? I don't know. He wasn't in a Time Agency fold.
He was a variant.
Right.
Right. But they're he was at least variants. Sort of working with them. Like,
I think
is he
new Loki and old Loki are going to be friends for at least 3 episodes.
Oh, Lady Loki?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're going to pretend to be friends.
Yeah, they're working together. Next episode, they're working together. Hands down.
Okay. I think I agree with that. Yeah. They're working together. They will both stab each other in the back.
I'm
going to
say that they're not working together next episodes. I'm going to say that he's following her. He's going to try and find out what she's actually up to. That's my guess.
Yeah.
No. I think they're working together.
Okay. We'll find out. Well,
lots of banter.
Probably for the purpose of stabbing somebody in the back.
No, yes. I agree.
Yeah.
But they're definitely hanging out together all next episode and wherever they went.
All right. We'll find out. Well, in 2 weeks, you can hear if we were right or wrong, because we'll come back and talk about our thoughts on the next 2 episodes.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.